Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and thanks for tuning in to Inside Scoop Live. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and joining me today is Susan Parker. Susan's memoir, Walking in the Deep End, has just been published by Silver Cap Publishing, and she is here today to talk about her personal journey and the many insights that she spotlights in this incredibly inspiring book. Susan Parker is a consultant, motivational speaker, and author of numerous short stories and has published business articles and technical papers. After spending her formative years as a Catholic and most of her life in no less than 6 evangelical denominations, her experiences reveal a pursuit of faith as sincere as any souls on the planet. She is committed to helping others connect to their authentic selves and to promotion of understanding between religious, cultural, racial, sexual orientation, and gender equality groups through the power of humor, honest dialogue, artistic expression, and meaningful interchange. Susan has served as the Director of Job Training and Placement for a nationally recognized nonprofit organization and possesses over 15 years' experience as a consultant focused on recruitment, workplace effectiveness, and diversity. Susan holds a BS in Business Administration, has studied and traveled throughout the world, loves leading workshops, appearing on internet and public radio, and speaking in front of both large and small groups. She currently lives in Houston, Texas, and her personal website is susanparkerbooks.com, and her new book's website is walkinginthedeepend.com. So all that said, welcome to the program today, Susan.
Hi, Juanita. Thanks so much.
Hi. So you cover so many issues in this new book, Walking in the Deep End. Was it really originally intended to be such a multifaceted memoir?
Well, you know, I didn't even set out to write a memoir. I was, as you noted, I've written other things and decided to start a novel set in Civil War Spain when someone convinced me that I should write this book. And I guess, to be truthful, I resisted it because I knew that there were so many topics to be covered and it would be a difficult task. But on the other hand, I decided it would be important because it would give me the opportunity to communicate about all types of issues. And it's been my hope and it's my hope now that the book may be able to help those that might be feeling many of the same things I've felt, even if their experiences are different. You know, I've always believed in the power of story, and I believe that when we share our stories, we find really that we have so much more in common than we thought possible, and you know, we find we're not alone. We find comfort.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that you weren't. That this wasn't a book. I mean, many times when we're talking a memoir, you know, I hear from authors that, oh, I had been thinking about this book for years and years before I put pen to paper. But your inspiration came not quite like that.
True. It wasn't quite that way. But, you know, the more I thought about it, the more I thought it was important. I think because I knew that people might relate to the book on many levels. I grew up in a very warm and loving family. But like all families, we had our share of dysfunction, and ours really centered mostly around secrets. And you know, we didn't really deal with difficult truths like a gay, illegitimate uncle, or eating disorders, or depression and suicide. We sort of just kept moving and avoiding things. And in many ways, I think we also substituted our evangelical faith for dialogue and therapy and a real facing of the truth. So, you know, it seemed to me, at least, that there was a lot of shame around all of that. And I find that as I talk to people around the country, both online and in person, people have those issues, whether they're not, you know, shame and hiding and avoidance are issues that people deal with. And I find that creating dialogue around those things can bring help to others and help for myself as we try to make sense of our experiences.
Mm-hmm. Well, we need to talk with other people. We need to know that other people have experienced that. That's part of the healing journey, I imagine.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, one of the things, you know, we all know that structure is important. You know, it's great to have, you know, society needs structure so that we don't have chaos, of course. But there are belief structures that are built, you know, either derived from our families or our culture or religion or friends. And when all or part of these structures are built on fear and shame, then there's usually significant pain and fallout from that. So, and one of the things that I found is people begin hiding who they really are. They lose their authentic selves, and they sometimes even end up, as I did, hating themselves. So it's really not a question of values, but it's really because we each have to, you know, respect each other's values. I think it's more about the fact that we have to really recognize how our belief structures operate, how they impact our behaviors, and we need to ask ourselves, you know, are we really willing to look at that? And if so, are we willing to really listen about how some of our belief structures may be creating damage?
Mm-hmm. So your overarching theme for this book really is getting to our authentic selves.
Yes, it really is. I think, you know, regardless of who you are, that's a struggle for all of us. There's pressures from society and church and family and even in our own minds, I think, to be something or to be something we aren't or something we wish we could be, and it's destructive. I read a quote from Dr. Lisa Smith in Florida, and I just thought it was great. She's a therapist, and she said, "If people chose to live authentic lives, I would gladly shut the doors of my practice. Most people, however, do not live authentic lives, and by this I mean that most of our efforts are spent in accommodating others, behaving the way we think others need or want us to behave. But by facing our shadow side and sharing our true selves with others, we could minimize much confusion, conflict, and interpersonal pain." And I thought that said it very well, at least in terms of what I've experienced in my life.
Well, when did you start looking at that shadow and really uncovering your belief structures?
It was such a long process, Juanita, but I think everything came to really a head in probably my late 30s and early 40s. I had moved to Texas from Ohio, where I'm from, and was lonely and sort of really sort of searching for, you know, who am I? I knew who I was as a mother and as a spouse, but finally really realizing that I had all kinds of baggage and issues, but I hadn't really looked at who I really was. And shocking myself, I actually developed a friendship and fell in love with my best friend. And for me, that was a huge crisis of conscience because as an evangelical Christian, you know, I had been raised to believe that, you know, gay people or people who are bisexual or however we want to talk about it were an abomination. So I had a real crisis of conscience around that. And that caused a whole cascade of things to really look at things that happened in my life, including, you know, other things, other issues I'd had, including an eating disorder, which really was about me stuffing my feelings for years.
Mm-hmm. Do you think at the bottom of all of it really was the fundamentalist faith or that structure that kind of spun off everything else?
Well, I think that had a big part of it because, you know, that was such a big part of my life. It's not that I don't believe that there's anything right about evangelical Christianity, but I think there are parts of it that are, parts of that belief structure are built around shame and fear and hiding and maybe a disregard for some basic truths about diversity and biological diversity. And so, yes, for me, that was a large part of it. But you know, clearly there are other social pressures, you know, in regards to my eating disorder. I mean, that had to do with societal pressures to be thin and to look a certain way. On the other hand, I take responsibility for these things because I internalized those belief structures. So this is definitely not a book about blaming. This is a book about awakening and accepting responsibility.
You know, it's interesting that not only do you explore your family dynamics, but you really go into culture, religion, peer pressure, all of this. It gives so much credence to the whole recovery process. I mean, these are all very important to you when you uncovered your belief structures.
Yes, they are. And thank you for mentioning that. You know, and I think the overall, even, you know, the bigger picture takes a look at society at large. If these things affected me this way, and the people I talk to across the country talk about how things affect them, when we step back and look at how they affect society, mm-hmm. it's really interesting. You know, the World Health Organization says by next year, by 2010, depression will be the number one disability in the world. So if we go back to what Dr. Smith said about authentic selves, that she could close the doors of her practice if people would be who they are. And I guess I contend that when you're not who you are, you become depressed. You kill the dream of who you could be and who you wanted to be, and in fact who you were created to be, by trying to be something else. So depression is the number one disability in the world by next year. Suicide, and I found this, I didn't know this statistic until recently, and, you know, September is Suicide Prevention Month. Suicide kills twice as many Americans as HIV/AIDS.
Wow. That's incredible.
It really is. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, we really don't talk about this much, and I know it's incredibly uncomfortable, but part of the reason I was able to be convinced to write this book was that I knew that there needed to be some light, and maybe a little heat, but a lot more light on these topics.
Mm. And the eating disorder situation, I mean, it is rampant. It's another thing that isn't really talked about.
That's right. That's absolutely right. You know, who can think of something that has more shame associated to it than
right.
eating disorders? I estimated that in the 6 or so years that I had bulimia, I threw up 6,000 times.
Mm-mm.
I mean, that's appalling, and it's not tidy, and it's not nice to hear, but that's the reality. And, you know, there are millions of young women, other women all over this country, all over this planet with that problem. I've even met some men that have the problem.
Sure.
And it is very much an issue that's difficult to, you know, to address because, you know, we're embarrassed by it. I was incredibly embarrassed by it. When I first developed a disorder in 1979, it wasn't even in the Diagnostic Statistic mm-hmm. Manual of Disorders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there was nothing for you really to relate that to.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I thought I was alone.
And so part of your mission right now, I know, is empowering girls in this area.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's really important for us to come together as communities and really help girls feel good about who they are, to tap into what their talents are. You know, in my position, in my professional career as a recruiter and as a consultant, I've done a lot around helping people get in touch with what their talents are and following that to a corresponding career. And so helping people that way, but also helping girls not internalize these false messages that we hear about how we should look like and what we should weigh.
Mm. Now, in your journey, we already mentioned that you did go back into your family life, and you, looking at your family, I imagine from the outside, it wasn't wildly dysfunctional, but take us back to those early years and just give our audience an idea of your family dynamic.
Sure. Well, like you said, you know, when you're in it, you don't think of it that way. My parents were incredibly loving. I think they got overwhelmed by stresses that occurred by other members of our family, you know, by their parents and grandparents and things that had happened. It was just sort of a crescendo of events. you know, for example, my father's sister had suffered depression and ended up committing suicide, and that had a great impact on him and his depression. And when he was 41, he had a breakdown and tried to commit suicide, and I ended up walking him around the room to try to keep him alive when I was 11. So what that did was help create a belief structure in me that said, I have to be a savior. I have to try to save the world, save others, make things okay. And so I took that, and I guess I wish I had realized I was doing that for many years of my life, because that would have helped me get in touch with my authentic self. When I finally reached my crisis, when I coincidentally turned 41, I realized that, you know, I either was going to exit the planet, much like my father wanted to do when he was 41, or I was going to have to find a way to go on living. By then I had two amazingly awesome kids, and I thought, I can't leave the planet while they're here. And also, I had read something by Maya Angelou that said, for our children to approve of themselves, they have to see that we approve of ourselves.
Oh, that's powerful.
Isn't it? And
yeah.
I thought, you know, I want my kids to approve of themselves. And the only way they're going to do it is if they see me approve of myself. So I set out to approve of myself. And I pretty much said, God, look, you know, you may hate me, like some people in my church may tell me, but I'm going to have to go on and try to find a way. And what I found is that God has continued to bless me, that I have a really rich and full life. And it's not perfect, and I'm certainly not perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But It is. It has been really a beautiful journey.
So what does that look like today, being that parent, and how is that different from what you saw growing up?
Well, I think what's different is that we don't live with any elephants in the living room.
No secrets.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. I mean, however uncomfortable it may be to talk about some things, we try to talk about them. And I try to really have a lot of open dialogue with the kids. And clearly, I fail as well. And I've caught myself failing and having to really go back and say, wait a minute, guys. You know, this is how things are. I'm sorry we haven't talked about this, you know, in the past, but we need to talk about these things now. So I think that's probably the biggest difference. And then the other one is I just don't live in shame. You know, I'm not ashamed of who I am. I'm not ashamed of if I happen to date somebody from my same gender. I'm not ashamed of that. I'm not ashamed of my Christian beliefs either. So, you know, I guess I feel good about where I am in my life, and I think that's probably the biggest difference.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Are you looking for new ways to promote your book? Why not consider being interviewed live? With the huge impact internet radio as well as podcasting is making in our society, your voice can now be heard worldwide. Let Juanita at Inside Scoop Live create the necessary steps for you. You will not only receive a web page of your own, but your interview will be available for MP3 download and RSS feed. As well, your interview will be posted on venues such as iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, Podcast Alley, and the Inside Scoop Live blog. Go to InsideScoopLive.com today for more information. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Just to remind you, I'm talking today with Susan Parker. She is the author of Walking in the Deep End, and you can find out more at WalkingInTheDeepEnd.com. What do you think the key is, or the secret code for getting over that shame? Is it just letting go of either being a victim, or is it just taking full responsibility for our choices?
I think, yeah, you know, that's such a great question. I think it's a process. It's a process of deciding that you want to look at things and be as truthful and accept responsibility and start not internalizing things and really connecting. For me, it's also part of a, you know, I know this isn't the case for everybody, but for me, it's part of my spiritual journey to really meditate and to really, you know, ask for guidance on some of these things. But it's a process, but it there is very much a large component about taking responsibility and also communicating with others, you know, being real. I think the more I'm real, the more I'm able to gain real perspective from others and from the world.
So what is your spirituality today? What does it look like? And how did you reconcile it from your fundamental past?
Yeah, I think, you know, I read a great book by Brian McLaren called A New Kind of Christian several years back, and it really helped me. And he's part of the whole emerging church or emergent village movement, which is a Christian movement, but that looks a little bit more closely at issues of social justice and contemplative prayer and things like that. And it was just a process I felt for me, and the book shows these sort of uncanny little miracles of people that were sent into my life with messages for me, and I just sort of kept moving forward. One of them was a woman named Deronda Williams, who's here in Houston, and I met her, and I didn't know her. She has, interestingly enough, has some intuitive gifts, and I had never met her before, and she asked me, "So you're writing a book, yes?" And I said, yeah. And I told her it was about Civil War Spain, and she said, "Well, I think you need to write a different book." And it was pretty uncanny, and she is one of the people that really sort of helped me, guide me, and helped me believe that, you know what, God is not my enemy, that He does care for me. And I think that knowledge would help a lot of people who have been told, especially in the LGBT community, that they are unworthy and unacceptable and shameful.
Do you think it's possible to reach the level of healing that you have on your own?
I'm kind of a believer that anything's possible, but I think the probably the optimal is to have support and you know, connect with other people, and so I think that's probably the best thing. And professional help, you know, I used to call them my crack team of experts. I had a therapist, I had life coaches. One of my best friends is a life coach out in Boulder. Her name is Grace Moore, and she was phenomenally helpful and influential in helping heal me and helping me get to the place where I could be honest with myself, accept responsibility, and move on with a lot of joy.
So when you basically kind of hit your bottom or came to that crisis point, how long into your therapy and when you were kind of exploring these issues, did you really feel like you were getting on top of it?
Oh, wow. I think it took me, you know, four years or so, 4 or 5 years. I mean, but it was, again, a process, a little by little. There was, you know, a speeding up of things, as I said, right around the time I was 41, because I literally made the decision to live. And once I did that, then things, and not just to live and not just to survive, but to overcome and be empowered. So I think once you really hit bottom, then you make that solid decision, and that's when things can move quickly.
It's like that you springboard from
yeah,
that bottom.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And when you stop being a victim, you stop thinking that people did this or that to me. No, you know, I have a lot of choices in life. Viktor Frankl's book, oh my gosh, now I'm going to blank on the name of that book. But that was another book that was really powerful about his struggle in prison and how the fact that people even in prison still have choices.
Yeah, absolutely.
Man's Search for Meaning. That's the book. Thanks.
Can you pinpoint anything that was just really critical to your healing process?
It was just a whole
it was all of it.
Group of things. Yeah.
So with all of the issues that you really address in Walking in the Deep End, your bulimia, the suicide, self-acceptance, the same-sex attraction, do you think that there's any one of those that just is more dominant, is really your focus?
I don't think so, because it sort of you know, covers everything in different time frames. I think the suicide was more in the early part of the book, and the eating disorder and other excesses, you know, during my college years. And then, you know, the same-sex attraction issues didn't occur to me at all until the end of the book, until near, you know, the last 10 years of my life or even less. So it's just sort of the truth of the progression of my life. But, you know, irregardless, there's going to be people, I think, that can relate to this book and that have told me, you know, I've been talking to different people and having them read the advanced review copies, and who haven't experienced any of those things. But because they have shame or issues that from other issues, they relate. You know, we're all part of this human condition. And I think that the more we talk about our background and the things that happened to us, the more we recognize, you know, how similar we are. And I'm big about diversity too. And I think, you know, I think life is a lot like when I was in Spain. One of my favorite dishes is a paella. You know, there's so many ingredients in a paella and so many colors. And when we can really grasp the beauty of that, you know, the diversity, not just of our background, but of our experiences, and share those, there's just this huge paella of life that we get to experience that's really opened up a lot of doors for me. I have friends all over the world. I have a lot of fun. You know, it's just really amazing what that does when you live authentically and you tell the truth.
And you open up to the world around you.
Exactly, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Such a strong message and really such an inspirational book. So how did you feel having the book finished, published, and in your hand? I mean, you know, I hear so often with authors that write memoirs that are this deep that there was a catharsis. It really was a healing in itself.
Yeah, it really was through the process of writing it. I think even probably 2 years ago in the process of writing the book was when I first took responsibility for my bulimia. You know, I knew that that those people I've known in my life who had problems with alcohol had to take responsibility for their alcoholism. But I personally, I don't think until the process of writing this book took responsibility for my addiction, which was to food and to, you know, and bulimia. So that was very, very enlightening and helpful. And yeah, it felt great when it's done. Right now, it's at the printer. The publication date officially is January 2010. Although we're having a book launch, an online book launch party on October 9th, where it'll go on sale online to try to generate some interest. But yeah, it felt great getting that done and sending it to the publisher and going, ah,
oh. It's finished. Oh, and you're actually going on an extensive book promotion tour. You've not only web forums and your book launch, but you're doing speaking engagements, book signings, workshops all around the country.
Yes, I am. I am. The next one is at the Young Women's National Conference in D.C., and I think it's October 24th. And there's several other things scheduled between now and the end of the year, and then we'll be doing a lot of book signings starting in January.
So will you be shifting your focus career-wise more into the realm of speaking, motivational speaking, and the topics of your book?
Yes, I hope so. I mean, that's the plan. I've been doing a lot of this anyways, but it's sort of secondary to my sort of career management side of things. But I have a real love and concern for young people, so I'd like to do a lot with that, and that's why I'm really excited about the Young Women's National Conference. And anything I can do, especially to help young people, overcome some of these barriers to authenticity, I'd love to be able to do it.
Mm-hmm. So are you prepared for the controversy that this book might cause?
I think so, Juanita. I mean, these are some topics that have a lot of emotion around them, especially when you talk about, being gay and being Christian. I mean, there's a lot, obviously, in the news about that, but, all I'm doing is really sharing my story, and hopefully maybe challenging people to listen to one another a little bit more, to consider how belief structures that we've held, how they have some negative consequences, and hopefully to bring more light than heat.
Well said. So any final messages you have for girls and women that are listening today that may possibly be in crisis?
I would just say, try to find somebody that you can talk to, that can listen to you, that you can be real with, and just commit to yourself that you will try to find the truth of your own experiences, the truth of who you are, and move forward in your life and try to ignore some of these very negative and untrue statements that come at us from all directions.
So what do you think, Susan, are some of the strongest social forces that are opposing women and girls today?
Well, I think society at large flashes images of rail thin models, and then you turn the page and there's a chocolate cake recipe, and the magazine. I think a lot of the reality TV shows that are out there now are sort of a distortion maybe of real life to some degree. I heard something about Megan Fox, who's sort of the latest It Girl, said that she really doesn't like the way she looks, doesn't like herself. And, and I remember, clearly, Marilyn Monroe had issues. So, we want to be like these icons, but the reality is a lot of times they're not happy either. So it's I think, good to try to be who we are and recognize that. But I recognize it's incredibly difficult, with the pressures of society. And then, of course, there's pressures from church. I think, religious organizations, while well-meaning, sometimes come up with messages that are unfair and untrue. And part of the great difficulty there is when people really believe they're right, they're not willing to listen. And I know, because I was there. And I talk about some of my own religious hypocrisy in the book, and that's really part of my journey, is getting through that.
I don't think people really realize, or that a lot of people realize, how large of a population of fundamentalists there really are in our society.
Oh, it's huge. I mean, and you see that it acting itself out in politics. I think that's one of the things. I felt like with maybe the start of the Dominionist movement, where Pat Robertson and Francis Schaeffer, and who wrote Christian Manifesto, and James Dobson decided that they needed to take back, quote-unquote, America. This idea that the being a Christian is about getting involved in the political process. I think, me personally, that's where I believe Christianity went wrong. But that's a very powerful message, especially in days like today where people are feeling less empowered, where they see that the world is changing. They're frustrated with the fact that we're becoming more and more diverse in our nation's racial makeup and in other ways, and some people, I think, feel it as though that they're losing power and they're scared. And so, again, when your belief structures are built on fear, that's where I think some of the problems are. Problems begin.
That's such a great point. And you didn't really go political in this book.
Not really. No, I mean, I talk about a few things, but I knew I did attack so many other things, so many other social issues there wasn't much time. But I do address that a little bit. As I was a teenager, looking at some things that were going on and not being very comfortable with it, I do address it somewhat. But mostly, this book is centered around the social issues we've talked about.
Mm-hmm. I love the cover. It speaks so eloquently to your message.
Well,
yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, and especially, girls looking at that. I mean, that's just beautiful. Well, I want to mention your website again. It's walkinginthedeepend.com. So tell us what we can find there.
Well, hopefully, and it's sort of very much a work in progress,
mm-hmm.
but you can find there information, about some of the upcoming events that we have, and I usually try to post some inspiring quotes. I'm going to have a book trailer up soon that will talk about the book, and hopefully the site will be very interactive. I want people to write to me, talk to me. You can find me on Facebook at Facebook/Susan Parker Books, just to create dialogue. If young girls are looking for somebody to chat online with about some of the stresses that they have, or young people of any kind, young guys too that might be facing some eating disorders, I'd be happy, obviously, to talk to them as well. Or anybody that feels like they are facing some of the same struggles I had, I'd be happy to talk to. I've been having some interesting conversations in discussion groups on Facebook, which I find to be a really cool tool.
Mm-hmm. The internet is incredible.
Yeah, really is.
Now, you'll also have your upcoming events.
That's right. The website will show some of the upcoming events, and really the biggest one on the docket right now is our October 9th book launch party,
mm-hmm.
which will be happening all day on October 9th. And if you buy a copy that day, you'll have a chance to win some prizes, and we're going to donate a laptop computer to a national charity, so that because I'd like other people to share their stories, and if we can give a laptop in somebody's hands to help them share their story and begin journaling and writing, then that I think would be a good thing too.
That's fantastic. You part of your message too. I mean, you've really said it numerous times in the interview, is the power of story.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Fantastic. Susan, it's been wonderful talking with you
today. Well, thank you, Juanita. I've really enjoyed it. Really appreciate your time.
Absolutely. And you as well. And I hope we get a chance to talk again, and much success to you.
Thank you so much. Take care.
You too. All right, listeners, that's been Susan Parker. Her new book, Walking in the Deep End, is out now, or in the works, actually. Her book launch October 9th. Do stay tuned for that. Go to her website, walkinginthedeepend.com, for more information. So I want to thank you for listening to this very inspiring interview today on Inside Scoop Live. I'm Juanita Watson, and until next time.